Hello, and welcome to Androids and Assets. We're very lucky to have a conversation with Candace, animal researcher and friend of the show, about Okja 2017, directed by Junho Bong. We continue our conversation today about agriculture, food science, and sustainability. We hope you enjoy it. I also wanted to add that since we have recorded this episode, we've gone live on Stitcher at Androids and Assets. If you are a Stitcher user, please follow us and rate us. We need your scathing criticisms and or lavish praise to sustain our fragile existence on this earth plane. We now join our conversation, already in progress.
And the other thing I found is that all these researchers working with the animals, the scientists, I really respect them. I worked with some brilliant minds, but they all kind of have workarounds, psychological workarounds, you know, to make it okay, whatever we're doing to, you know, because now we feed them grain, we finish them faster, they produce less methane in their lifetime, it's better for the environment, you know, and they kind of pick the things that make it seem, what we're doing seem ethical. But no one talks about the quality of life of these animals. That's not on the table.
Well, I think one of the most important scenes in this movie occurs early on when Mija and Okja are in like a pond and like there's fish swimming in the pond. So Mija has Okja jump in the pond and a bunch of fish wash out. Mija takes the adult fish, puts it in her bag and throws the baby fish back into the water. Hmm. And it's kind of this whole thing about sustainability of the food supply and with the way you take from nature, but not too much too fast.
And that also came, I feel like that came back when they were talking about marketing the meat and like handing out the sausages, and everyone was talking about how like great it tasted and how we just need to get more of this out there. And it's not even about like what do people need. It's just what can we make people want so we can make money.
Oh, absolutely. Even at the end, after there was some near the end of the movie, animal rights activists have exposed a lot of the cruelty that goes into breeding these breeding the super pigs. And after it's been exposed, one of the CEOs has a line where she says, "It doesn't matter if it's cheap; people will eat it." Mm-hmm. And I think, sadly, it's true. It's a pretty scathing critique of modern capitalism, but I think it's also spot on that people need to eat, and if you can make food cheap enough for them to eat, they don't really care what it is as long as they just can get food, which it's sad, but you see a lot of people who live in fairly severe poverty eating food that is not good for them, but it's what they can afford. So they get crappy sugar-filled fruit drink that isn't actually juice, or they get very, very processed foods that
and sodium and nitrates and other, you know.
Yeah. And you end up with like the weird paradox of people who are in poverty and you're like, well, you shouldn't have, like, you don't seem to get enough to eat, but then they still seem to be obese.
Obese and malnourished.
And malnourished, and it's terrible. But that's the food that we make available to them. And so it hurts when this person says, oh yeah, we've seen all of the cruelty for these animals. We treat them terribly and everyone will eat them anyway because that's what they can eat.
Yeah, well, there's this very bourgeois mentality of like, well, people should just make different consumption decisions. And if they made different consumption decisions, they would change the system.
That's a very privileged.
Yes, exactly.
Position.
And that is only an option for people with the affluence which to do so. And so they become very judgmental of people who, you know, don't do that, who can't afford to do that. It becomes a very classist sort of.
Well, why don't you just eat fresh food? Well, it's very expensive. I don't know the last time you were at a farmer's market, but those carrots don't come cheap.
Can I digress a little bit?
Yeah,
I feel like we forgot to mention something really important.
Yeah.
And that's that this super pig is environmentally friendly.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a weird poop.
Yes. It produces, it's super efficient and can gain all this weight and meat and produce like no waste basically to the environment.
I'm assuming it has like 8 stomachs and just digests every different part of the whatever it eats.
It eats every part of the parsimon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting because, again, that's what we're trying to do with cattle, right? Like, how do we make them produce no methane or less methane? And that's, I was involved in a number of different research projects helping people and things, and that at least half of them were methane reduction projects. How can we reduce the methane? And that's what makes it then that if we can get rid of methane, then it's more ethical to eat these animals, you know?
Well, and the methane becomes a big issue for, like, you know, and a lot of the attacks in the cow industry currently, like, that's cowspiracy's primary issue.
Which I think is just missing the point completely.
Right.
Like,
it's not that these animals shouldn't be eaten. It's that these animals are an environmental scourge, and so we shouldn't have them.
Yeah, that's what Cowspiracy is saying.
Right, and Oh, yeah.
But also...
But that misses entirely. It's like, oh, you shouldn't have these cattle because they harm the environment. Not, you shouldn't have these cattle because they're intelligent animals, and maybe we just shouldn't be eating them.
I guess I don't fall in the we shouldn't be eating animals camp. Just to, in response to your comment. If you look at nature, lots of animals eat other animals. We're animals. I don't think we need to be above eating other animals. But I think that we need to be more respectful of the way that we do that. And we don't, and like you said, balance and sustainability, right? Do we really need to eat as much meat as we eat here? No. No way. Do we really need to raise that much beef so that everyone can have a steak every day? No way. And to have these animals live a terrible quality of life? Why can't the animals have a good quality of life and then
be eaten?
You know, why can't we look at the animals and respect them as living creatures and still eat them?
And one of the things you said...
And I think once you do that, it completely changes the way you think about your food, and you become more thankful for the sacrifice of those animals, you know, to help sustain your body.
Well, and one of the things you said when you were talking after Okja, after we watched it, is you said that everyone talks about methane, but a huge carbon sink is the fact that, like, there's all this energy-intensive and mechanized processes around them. Like, mm-hmm. What is the methane when you are trucking these cows all over the world, feeding them trucked in food, and then running them through, you know, and then refrigerating them and shipping them out to markets?
And the agricultural cost of growing the food and tilling the soil and harvesting, those things all kind of get put together with the methane output of...
Yeah, and there's other issues like nitrogen and phosphorus fixation into the water course and algal bloom and those sorts of things, which are significant. Yeah, well, just like, yeah,
pollution,
like, these are,
methane,
like pollution, all these other things. And more of those things come from intensiveness, mechanization, and this whole green revolution kind of system, a way of growing food around, like, the way we do chemical fertilization and the way we have built shipping lanes and mechanization into the food system. And then we kind of have these pet projects in that broader framework, like cattle methane becomes a huge thing. And when you think about the destructiveness of the automation and the carbon sink of the automation pales in comparison to the methane of the cattle themselves.
There was a neat, a large part of the movie is the Animal Liberation Front trying to save Okja. Allow her to be tortured to expose the evil corporation, but then to save her. Again, saving only the one animal out of thousands. Mm-hmm. So their creed is to not harm any animals, and that they're trying to save animals from laboratories and slaughterhouses and cruel farming practices, which is you know, very laudable and admirable. There's one member of the ALF, though, who apparently hasn't eaten for days because
There's no ethical
alternative for him. He's all like, food is violence. I can't have, certain vegetables and whatever that you're feeding me because it was ripened in this way and trucked across
ethylene.
The world and
ethylene ammoniated or
whatever. So
they do ripen them in ethylene.
He does just not eat, and I thought that was kind of an interesting commentary that like there's nothing for him to eat because the system in which we're living just is not accommodating. So I'm sure when he's at home, he has whatever organic producers that he's part of a cooperative or something.
His window boxes.
But anytime that he's traveling, he just doesn't eat because he can't.
He has an ideological eating disorder.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
I stole that from Mark Maron. That's not my... He says that when he's talking about veganism, which is also interesting.
Well, there's this whole thing of... orthorexia and like this whole concept of like people who may have developing like dysfunctional eating in relationship to senses of like purity and wholeness and goodness. So they don't eat because they believe that all food outside of their narrow criteria is poisonous or morally bad. And so it actually starts to interfere with their weight. They get weight drop and they get anorexic type symptoms. So there's a move to kind of pathologize that impulse for good or for bad. I don't know. Eating disorders are a serious issue, obviously, but it gets very complex.
But I think it's really interesting when you make the food an ethical issue, because orthorexia is more like
purity,
healthiness. Yeah. Only these three foods are healthy, right?
Yeah.
I can only eat kale and sweet potatoes and quinoa. But
nothing else is good for me.
Yeah, everything else.
Whereas he's saying everything else, the food in general is just not ethical. And so he'll only eat ethically produced food. And it's not available.
And I think once you start trying to live ethically in any area of your life, you start realizing how impossible that is, especially in the West.
Yeah.
That's not...
It brings you into conflict with your society.
It does.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You either remove yourself entirely.
Yeah. You realize like I can't
or
survive.
You make exceptions. Well, I can accept this amount of a breach of my ethics for pure survival purposes.
Unfortunately, we are the bad guys.
You and I.
Well, just Western civilization
Stephen and I are the bad guys that have caused the downfall of Western society.
Yeah.
Cat's out of the bag.
All right, yeah. Our machinations are coming to fruition.
Yeah. I mean, you realize that everything is just a product of exploitation, whether you're exploiting other living creatures, other human beings, natural resources, you know, that's what we do.
Yes. But going back to sort of what you said, though, of like animals eat other animals, like they exploit their nutritional value, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's...
I mean,
there's an amount of like, you need to buy a shirt that someone else made because you don't make your own shirts. Like, if I don't know how to sew, I've got to find somebody. So, yeah, maybe not to do it in like an exploitative way.
Yeah.
But exploit is also like
a loaded term. Exploitation. Yeah. I don't mean necessarily just consumption, mostly like, again, it goes back to that sustainability thing. Are you taking what you need? Or are you taking a lot so then you can sell a bunch to make a lot of money? You know?
Yeah.
And are you taking a bunch from someone, from the work of someone else, so that you can make the money that someone else did? Like,
yeah.
There's degrees of this, for sure.
And this is what I love about Okja, because Okja, I think, is Fenime. It's the story of production. It's a production story. It's a food production story. And I think a lot of the stuff that... Because I don't think Okja is, again, like Mija is like they eat chickens, like they grow animals and kill them on their farm. Mija is not a radical, actually. She's not part of the ALF. She's not the Animal Liberation Front. She's just like a person, but she's just like is like, you know, she just wants a stable and steady life for herself and for the people and animals she cares about.
And I liked what you said after we watched it. You said it was more about our relationship to food, right? Like she had a relationship with Okja. It's a different, we're so disconnected from our food sources here.
Yeah.
Right? Like most people don't even know what a feedlot looks like. Most people have never been to a slaughterhouse. They don't, they don't understand how it operates. And most people would be really horrified if they went, because it's very, it's kind of gruesome.
Oh yeah.
You know, it gets the job done, but it's not pleasant to look at, and people don't really want to know.
No, certainly. And I would like if people had a more of an interest to kind of understand things about supply chains. I do think it's sort of unrealistic to expect everyone to know every supply chain in their life. And Mija's living situation was much more of a subsistence farming sort of, they would go out and find food for the day, every day, which is just not a realistic thing to ask of humanity. That every person go out every day and find just enough food to from the land to feed themselves.
Well, that's how you, and that's how you get mass deaths and famine.
Right.
Yeah, because something changes in the environment and then it puts millions of people at risk.
So I think there are definitely ways to be more sustainable with how we're growing and what we choose to grow. And not just grow, but also produce more generally. There's a ton of consumer electronics that are produced unnecessarily just to, you know, replace a perfectly functioning TV that was only 32 inches and you need the 52 inches now. So you just throw out the old TV because you need something bigger and better. This sustainability goes beyond just farming, but there does seem to, there does need to be some level of intensity so that one person can feed a bunch of people, but you can still do it in a sustainable way. I would like if people would be more thoughtful and mindful of what they're consuming. So they say, you know,
yeah, and I think everything is exacerbated by the relation by the energy system, because we have a carbon-based energy system. And so all of these things, like the way you get one person to grow food for 1,000 people is you bring in, you inject it with a whole bunch of energy in the form of mechanization, in the form of, you know, chemical products, in the form of logistics. And because everything's fueled by carbon, because it's all coal and LNG and gasoline, you know, like it's petroleum, like it then compounds the ecological impact of anything exponentially. And I think if we it's a transition in the agriculture system, it's a transition in the energy system, it's a transition just across the board.
Yeah. There was a great, I don't know, maybe you've been listening to Planet Money very recently about urine.
Yeah, the phosphorus cliff.
Yeah.
So
that, you know, there's only a certain amount of phosphorus that's readily available for mining on Earth, and most of it is in Morocco. Yes. And but humans are phosphorus producing factories. Everything that we eat, our kidneys just filter out the phosphorus and then we pee it out. So there were some projects that were done in municipalities or somewhere that they just gathered up a lot of urine. Like they had people peeing into bottles and then they would collect it in large casks and urns and such, and then they treated it a little bit, and then they just used it as fertilizer.
Almost pasteurize it to lyse any bacteria, any organisms in it, and then they would apply it to crops.
They had a stat in there, something about for all of the fertilizer that you put on a field, it's something like 3/4 of it is just run right off in water, and runs into streams and water systems and such,
and then ultimately the ocean.
But that phosphorus is almost completely unobtainable. Once you put it onto the field and it washes off, you can't get it back. It's just not feasible to actually get it out of a water system.
It'd be tremendously energy intensive to reclaim it.
Right.
And also these fertilizers contribute to, again, we were talking about earlier, algal blooms and all these organisms in the, like, and all these ecological disaster in the waterways that choke out fish and create dead zones in the oceans and waterways.
Eutrophication.
Yeah.
And so if we could find that more sustainable way of saying, rather than mining phosphorus and dumping it into the ocean, collecting up the phosphorus that we do get, like that we consume.
Also dump into the ocean.
We do the same thing, right? I mean, we put it into waterways again. There's huge advancements in sanitation systems like technology. It's a lot better than when, better not say this historically, it's a lot better than dumping raw sewage into the ocean, which some cities
still
sadly do. But, you know, we treat it and we let a lot of bacteria live off of it for a while. And then it's relatively clean when we put it back into the waterway. But it does have whatever else might have been good to keep. We just dump it into the river. it's pee anyway, right?
There was a couple things I wanted to talk about in the movie still.
Yeah.
I wanted to hear people's thoughts on the breeding scene.
Yes.
Which was very rapey.
Incredibly rapey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it was there was a direct
analogy.
Yes.
Yeah.
To rape.
I thought that was an interesting choice to make breeding is like rape.
Yeah, because Okja is returned to the laboratory at one point, the Miranda laboratory, and at that point she's coupled with a very large super pig,
male super pig
that is not gentle in any way.
And I mean, we didn't get a good glimpse of him, but he looked almost stitched together like a Frankenstein super pig.
Yeah. It's really made to be very scary. Yeah, like, it's violent and quite abused.
But I think it's like, it's really, there's a few things that are really interesting going on there. First of all, the assumption that this like male super pig would just rape her. Like, we don't know anything about super pig mating rituals or anything, but they just are like, yeah, well, if you're breeding them, then that's just straight up rape.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. And you made a good point. Like, why don't they just do AI?
Artificial insemination?
Like they do with all breeding animals today.
Especially when you're using like your prize stock. Like, this is your prize super pig. Like, it's exactly why they do AI, actually.
Yeah, and actually in cattle
and stuff.
Usually, the other thing that bothered me about this is if you've bred your animals, you're not going to then slaughter them.
You're saving them for
breeding. And one of the things you actually, if you're going to slaughter your animals, if you're going to slaughter your cows, if you're going to send them to the slaughterhouse, what you really want to do is stop them from mounting each other, because that kind of bruises the meat and causes discoloration. And then it makes your meat less valuable. So there's like a few things there where I was like, this doesn't make sense.
they also, after the mating, Okja responded by like being despondent and laying down and hiding in a corner, and it was very strange. And we don't know much about super pigs. Maybe that's how they naturally respond to mating. Sleep it off.
Yeah. Or I mean, it's weird that when they made the movie, they made that choice.
Yes.
To make their mating interaction like that.
To really anthropomorphize it.
Yeah, really a lot.
And it's really to solidify like Miranda's cruelty.
Yeah,
I think. And to compress a whole bunch of, I think, concerns about animal research and factory farming into a very tight period of time as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also, because at this point, Okja is also sampled. Like, they use a very cruel machine.
Mm-hmm.
And you looked into that machine.
Well, I never saw anything like that ever in my work with cattle. And I haven't worked with pigs, but I've learned about pigs, and I've learned about pig farming during my master's degree, and I never came across anything like that.
So the machine...
I couldn't find anything.
The machine we're talking about is...
It's called like a marbling tester.
A marble tester. We just want to see how marbled the meat is. So we'll take five samples from, you know, key pieces of the shank and the flank and
shoulder,
whatever else.
While the animal's alive.
Yes, because we want to know the quality of meat before we send it to slaughter. Which, I mean, might make sense if you had a way to then optimize the marbling, like to send it back out. To change it. Like, oh, no, this isn't the marbling we want. We'll send you back out and give you a different feed mix and change your marbling. But again, they were just sending it immediately to slaughter. So testing the marbling does nothing.
Mm-hmm. And that's
just cruel.
That's just checked after. Like, we know enough about animal diets that we know if we feed them this, then we should get pretty good marbling, you know, this on for these days. So, and then that's just checked after slaughter marbling, as far as I'm aware.
So that's not a thing. But other than that, it's actually like the slaughterhouse.
The feedlot scene and the slaughterhouse were very accurate.
Yeah. Like, even down to like the shoot, like in the gun.
Yeah, the gun where they shoot them in the head.
Yeah, under the eye. And then how they just have the mechanical chute that dumps them out into the conveyor belt and the giant saws.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all that stuff is there. Like, we went to that.
Yeah, I went to do some sampling from some tissue sampling for an experiment. We went to a slaughterhouse, and I brought you with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was a, it, in some ways, the one we went to was more shocking because it was smaller.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty intimate. And it really, there were things about it that bothered me for sure. Like the cow comes into the chute and there was the carcass of the other cow is like in the same room with that. And I don't know if that's just because that was such a small slaughterhouse that we went to. And also like there's blood all over and like they can definitely smell the blood. They are scared.
Yeah, they're freaking out.
They freak out and it's really, yeah, that moment, that's a horrible ending to a not great life. But then kind of what happens, this might sound callous, but you know, like what happens once they're dead? I mean, the rest of that doesn't really matter. But those moments, those last moments of their life and the moments of that make up their life, those are kind of what we need to think about, I think. That doesn't really get taken into account because that doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, we're very horrified by a giant saw bisecting.
Yes.
A corpse, you know, like.
But I find that less horrifying than the living conditions and the...
Than watching the cow that went in the chute before you being bisected in front of your very eyes.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah.
I'm more worried about if that saw gets cleaned on a regular basis.
Oh, they
do. Yeah, it does.
They do now. Yes. For sure. That wasn't always the case.
No.
The slaughterhouse industry used to be disgusting.
Well, it still can be. I mean, like, Alberta has had its share of Listeria scandals and whatnot. Like,
if you're ever curious,
the Brooks meat processing. Well,
that was like more different slicers.
Yeah,
wasn't
that's
it?
True. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, the XL.
The Jungle by Upton Sinclair. He was a journalist. Wrote a book about the meat processing in Chicago, I think, back in the 30s. And he was writing it as a socialist, saying these workers are being mistreated and we need to help save them. Americans read it and went, "They do what to my meat?" And that actually caused the federal government to introduce meat inspectors. That's why there are food inspections,
which is
in
a
factories.
Really good thing.
It's a fantastic thing.
Yeah.
Unintended consequences.
I trust the meat industry to self-regulate.
Self-regulation has never gone wrong ever before.
It worked great for Equifax.
And this was kind of the other like really, really big point in the movie was about industry, right?
Yeah.
Food industry.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Tilda Swinton is amazing in this movie.
Yeah.
I think because she plays two people, two twins. And one was Lucy Miranda, who proposed the whole super pig contest, you know, sending to the farm in the first place. And then
making them all about nature.
Yeah. And branding them all as, you know, ethical
non-GMO.
And clean. Yeah. And she's just, you know, and very, very, you know, and she wants everyone to like her and like her company and like her product. And then at a certain point that all goes sideways when the truth is revealed by the ALF and then Nancy comes in, her sister, and she's just very much about business. And it's interesting because at the end when Okja is saved because Mija has a gold pig that her grandfather gave her early on in the film. It was and she just buys Okja back. And because Nancy is just such a capitalist, she's like, yeah, okay, you bought it, good.
You bought a live pig, it's yours, done.
Like that's kind of the resolution of the film. Kind of crass capitalism is the only thing that works.
I like this attempt to kind of make the company trustworthy and likable, though, because I feel like that is exactly, that's what happens.
Yes.
In food production.
Well, you've been in rooms.
In every production.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
But so specifically,
you've been in rooms
I was
having that talk. Like.
Yeah, I went to a conference when I was doing my master's, and I went to an ethics panel, which was very poorly attended. Surprise. And it was really interesting. Like, they had an ethicist, and he wouldn't really pin down anything about what was ethical or unethical with our food system. Cause the talk was sponsored by like Bayer or it was, you know, by some
large
corporation.
Pharmaceutical.
Yeah. And one of the women who was talking, she worked for this company and I wish I could remember the name, but I can't, but her job is to basically, she does market research to help companies get consumers to trust them. And so her whole, like, she was giving all these stats about how, like, since the 60s, people don't trust large corporations anymore. And, you know, and how that was, like, really bad, but never any reflection on why don't people trust large corporations. It was just like, we need to get back to that time when people just thought we were great, you know, and had brand loyalty. And they thought, oh, that large corporation cares about me. So I really liked that in the movie. How she's like, we're so friendly. We, you know, like us.
That need to be
trust
loved.
Us.
Well, yeah, and certainly we live in this environment where everyone really cares about branding and marketing.
Moaning Myrtle was there the entire time to ensure that the all of the images that were going out were positive about Miranda.
Yeah.
Or if they weren't positive, trying to find ways to spin everything so that it was like, oh, well, actually, you know, we don't look that bad. If we spin it this way, things are okay.
Yeah, but it's all this sort of like manic, dystopic, like kind of just like really, it's really sinister and it's really completely self-involved. But it espouses this really, you know, nicey positivist kind of pseudo psychology.
We just want to feed the world.
Yeah. I think Lucy Miranda's line is like, I was envisioning new ways of doing business. You know, like that she, like, yeah, she's so, yeah, very in love with her own thoughts and, you know, her own kind of mysticism about business, which is, I think that's a real thing in the business world, you know.
Oh, it is.
There's definitely.
So this is kind of related to that. Recently, I was looking at job postings, and there was one for Monsanto that came up near here, and it was really interesting seeing their, what do you call that? Like the way they brand themselves and like their like vision statement. Yeah. They were talking about like, do you want to save the world? We're working toward feeding everybody. And that I feel like people, and especially these companies, have really bought into their own bullshit. You know, like, we are making the world better. We're saving the world. We're providing food for hungry people, you know? So, which is really toxic, because then there's no room for critical thought or for actually examining kind of the horrors that they're bringing upon the world, you know?
And it's terrible, because a lot of the things that they were doing in developing the super pig seemed great, right? Like having a pig that is environmentally friendly and does produce less methane and produce less waste. That seems like a really great idea. And I don't mind that there's research into advancing those sorts of things in animal nutrition. That's fantastic. But then to say, because we've done that, we have free license to do anything else. Because we're feeding the world, it doesn't matter anything else about what we're doing. There's like, you can't be critical of us because we do some good things, as if like the good things they do outweigh the bad things that they do. And you're like, no, if you're doing bad things, stop doing bad things. Like, just be better.
Because then the good things become a mask. They become a way to hide and like protect their like entrenched evil.
Exactly.
And we're very ready to see this exact phenomena in like other institutions like the church. The church, anytime somebody dresses themselves up in a sense of like importance and essentialness, and anytime someone says, I'm essential and I'm important and I'm foundational and I must exist, there's going to be abuses of power. And we're very ready to see that in other areas, but we seem very blind when it comes to, you know, production and often corporations. We don't hold them to the same, we don't have the same awareness, I think. You know, they can just fire a few people, change a few department names, and all of a sudden it's like, well, nothing bad happened.
Well, and we're just so susceptible to marketing. People just eat it up.
Yep. Well, Facebook had when they were doing like their social science experiments division that was testing people's like moods and stuff. It was called the Trust Engineering Group.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's what they called it. I mean, Facebook, this was a huge PR scandal for Facebook that they were doing. But that's what it is. It's an accurate descriptor, I think.
I think there's also a problem that if you hide behind doing some of the good things, I don't know how it's that people start to criticize you for almost the wrong thing, where they're like, oh, you're doing this wrong, and so that's what makes you evil. But the thing that they're doing wrong isn't actually, like, you're like, no, that's actually not the bad thing that they're doing. the bad thing that they're doing is like the really intense production. It's not the GMO testing that is bad. That's mm-hmm. just like the one way you decide to attack them. And if they stop doing that, there's still a lot of other really bad things that they're doing that are really incredibly harmful. So we almost get confused by the marketing that's out there of like, we get scared of them doing a bad, like we're like, oh, well, Terminator genes are a really bad thing. So I'm only going to attack the fact that they make Terminator genes mm-hmm. and ignore all of the other really horrible things that they engage in.
Sue farmers all the time.
Yeah.
Their own crops spreading into farmers' fields and like appropriate land from people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, and this is also part of, I think it's a comment, this dovetails very nicely into comments about activism. Which is also like you kind of have this liberal lobbying single issue mentality, which is mm-hmm. how kind of things work. When people advocate causes, you pay a lobbyist, you run some ads, you talk to congressmen, and you finance campaigns or whatever, right? It becomes single issue. You're like, well, I want to change X law, or I want to support X country, or I want to sanction this, you know. And that has kind of become the view through which we kind of interpret how grievances are aired in our society. And unfortunately, that doesn't. There are some things that are too deep, like you can't single issue them away because, like you say, mm-hmm. it's just too adaptive and too entrenched. And so that's why I think the ALF is really interesting, and I love their depiction in this because like they are doing very violent things. They're like running mm-hmm. cars off the road and like beating people down and getting into fist fights with people. And all the time they're saying like, I don't want to hurt you, like you mm-hmm. know. And then like one of the guys knocks the guy down to the floor, and says, are you okay? and there's this whole piece with the ALF about their 40-year credo. And their credo, and they have this, and and then of course when the credo is violated, who's the leader?
K. No, Jay.
Jay, yeah.
Jay's the leader. K is the guy who violated the creed.
Yeah, and then he proceeds to viciously physically assault K. Like, just like, knock him down and kick him in the ribs and just like really, really injuring him.
But that's okay because K learned his lesson and came back a changed man in that he'll never violate that creed again. He had a portion of it tattooed onto his arm.
Translation is sacred.
I was like confused for a little while as to whether they were supposed to be the good guys, or if they were being portrayed in a positive or
I don't
critical
know
light.
If and this movie has good guys and bad guys.
No, it doesn't, which is what's the one.
Well, Mija is a good guy.
Mija
and Okja are good people.
Yeah.
But the ALF, ALF is very ambiguous. I really like that about them. Like, they almost in every way make things worse. They really do exacerbate. They kind of exacerbate the situation a lot of the times.
I don't know. The post-credit scene seemed to suggest that there was widespread protests against Miranda. Mm-hmm. And that maybe ALF's efforts had actually worked to...
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah.
Create a backlash against the super pig.
Yeah.
Which, again, I don't know if, like, saying the super pig is the problem is the solution.
Yeah.
It's more like, how are you raising the super pig and how are you... Mm-hmm. How are you handling the entire production of the super pig? Like, I don't think the super pig is the issue.
Yeah. And are you doing business in a transparent, legal, and safe way?
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. I think is also tied up in that as well. Yeah.
It didn't, like, the movie didn't really seem to be that critical of the fact that the super pigs existed, right? Okja was, it didn't really seem to be that critical of GMOs, like genetically modified animals. Right. It was this genetically modified animal was like really intelligent and was like almost human.
Yes. I think the only critical part that we saw was in the laboratory when there was all of the failed super pigs. Right. There was one that was like covered with boils or something.
Yeah. And that was more I found that I couldn't really tell if that was critical of the engineering or the lab or do you know what I mean? Because if we can genetically modify these organisms so that they're more attractive and intelligent, then that's okay. Because Okja was.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, Okja, I want one.
Yeah. Don't we all?
As a pet.
Yeah, exactly. I would never eat it. I would just sleep on it.
I think it's a very complex movie and it's mm-hmm. very symbolically dense and it wrestles.
Can I say one more thing about it?
Of course. Yeah.
Oh, and this isn't really about the food production system, but I found it really refreshing to watch a movie where the women were real characters.
Mm.
The women were all interesting, you know, and they were people and they were powerful and flawed. And it was really enjoyable watching it and not just seeing women talking about men.
True.
And Mija is an 11-year-old action hero.
Oh my
yes.
God. Jumping off incredible. Of buildings.
I was just going to say, I'm waiting for the spinoff movie where, you know, she dons a mask and cape. Yeah. Off of buildings, onto a moving truck, yeah. onto the back of a moving truck when, you know, at high speed, she sees narrow. That the bridge is coming. And then
yeah.
she's incredible.
Yeah.
I want one.
You want a mean girl.
You want a 10-year-old Korean girl.
Like she's a commodity. And we've just... I'm done.
Shut it down.
Yeah. That's like, yeah.
I've learned nothing. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks, Candace, for being our guest.
Anytime.
Well, I'm sure that we'll have you back again. Music this week was provided by An Ant and an Atom. We appreciate your continued support. Be sure to find us on Google Play and iTunes. If you do find us on iTunes, rating us and leaving a review is super helpful. Helps other people find us, and helps us know what we can do better.
And remember, translation is sacred.
This week we have part two.
Do you want to read it?
Hmm?
I think it's okay. All right, I'm gonna go again.
Whoa!
I'm gonna go again.
Sorry,
I'm not trying to be a bitch. I'm just
what you want to read it, Marshall? Jeez.